I wanted to ask you first what you think is the state of financial literacy in the United States, especially in light of the whole subprime meltdown and the troubles in the economy now.
Well, I think that you have to take that in the context of our whole financial system, which has, in the last several decades, has really evolved rapidly. It's more complex, and there's more financial products and services available than ever before. Access to credit is more available than ever before. If you look at the Internet, you can now literally in 5 minutes type in your Social Security number and be trading on the New York Stock Exchange. So that's unprecedented access, which we haven't seen in the, you know, since the last decade or so. So what we're trying to do as a nation and as a state is catch up to this our new financial system. And so you'll see schools are starting to teach financial literacy more. You'll see workplaces starting to have the conversation about financial education programs in the workplace. We have the Governor Doyle's Council on Financial Literacy. First Lady Jessica Doyle is the honorary chair. And so that's a group of individuals made up of public and private sector. And we have adopted a variety of initiatives to promote financial literacy, such as Money Smart Week. Money Smart Week, we've had our second annual week last October, and we've had over 600 organizations step up to provide financial education and awareness throughout the state. And they together had put on 700 events, and that equates to over 8,000 attendees just in that 1 week alone in October. So that's we're beyond, I think, the awareness that we need more financial literacy. We're starting to get into how do we implement it, how do we get it to folks so that they can get the tools that they need to realize their own goals for themselves or their family.
Is it especially important now because of all the options out there, and then also, I guess, because in the past people might have had pensions from their companies to look forward to, that they need to do better financial planning earlier?
Well, that's an excellent point. There's a lot of trends that are converging that make financial literacy more important today than ever before. And you had mentioned one, this idea of, you know, pensions. Well, now we're kind of going into the era of 401k,
right,
where people direct their retirements or their savings and investing for retirement. And that means all of a sudden employees need to be experts in managing portfolios for the next, you know, two, three, four decades. But has there been financial literacy to augment that massive change? And the answer is no. And so that's where we need to catch up in that area. Of course, you know, people wonder about Social Security. Rising health care costs is squeezing households' disposable income. People are living longer, so we're going to need more resources throughout our lifetime. So, you know, you kind of add all that together, and you can kind of see why it's we're talking about financial literacy today as opposed to, you know, maybe years ago.
With pensions in the past, you knew what you were getting, and I guess people who still work in the public sector might have those, but is it more risky now for people than it was in the past?
I think the risk is not doing anything. The risk is waiting until you're in your 40s or 50s and realizing, gee, I should have been, you know, leveraging the time value of money throughout my life, whereas maybe in the days gone by, like my dad worked for a company for so many years, and they kind of handled that. And then, you know, all of a sudden, when you kind of realize the importance of having a pension, they said, hey, that's okay, we've been working on that, and we have been leveraging the time value of money, compounding interest and so on. So that message needs to be out there to, you know, 20-year-olds that are starting their new job and they now have First day on the job, you give a stack of materials that you have to go through, and it's hard for them, like anybody, to sift through all that information. And there's more mutual funds than there are stocks right now. So there's a lot to learn. But you don't want to get into a situation where it's kind of analysis paralysis. If you don't act, then you haven't done anything. So I think that's a key area. Also, just learning about financial transactions. And for instance, if you ask seniors in high school today, how many of them have a pre-approved credit card in their name? About a third of them will raise their hand.
Huh.
Just because the access is greater than it has been. Credit isn't good or bad, it's just a tool, just like a car. When we don't tell kids, okay, just hop in the car, drive around until you figure it out, come back to me and tell you how you did, but that's kind of what we do with credit cards. Out here, you know. So they might not appreciate just how much money is being spent if they have a balance month to month. Or some of the introductory rates, or, you know, all these other sort of gotchas. So our goal is to be proactive with financial literacy so that people know a little bit more about their own financial matters before they enter into a contract. They should know what that contract's about. They should know if it's appropriate for them before they sign the dotted line.
Are young people who are out there in the job market signing up for 401ks or are there any statistics on that?
I'm sure there are some statistics. I don't have those available to me right now. We're seeing some policy changes. A couple of years ago, there was the Pension Protection Act, which also sprung from that, was this opt-out provision for 401ks. So now firms, it's easier for them to provide to a new employee a basic sort of 401k package, and you have to opt out if you don't want to be part of that.
Uh-huh.
And so the research indicates that more people are going to just stick with it, and then later on when they really appreciate what that's all about, they'll be very thankful that they were in there. Right now, most people have to opt in
right.
to a 401k. So that, you know, policy changes, I think it's going to go a long way into helping a lot of individuals. And let me put two into context of financial illiteracy. There is a national survey that's been conducted since 1997, and it's been every other year. And they ask seniors in high school about 30 questions. It's a quiz about applied financial literacy. And so in 97, this is a national test that is sponsored by the National Jumpstart Coalition for Financial Literacy for Youth. But so what they discovered is the average score correct that students received was 57% correct. So that's an F. And then it's gone down in over the years, actually. And so in 2006, which is the last time they administered the exam, it was 52.4%. So it's actually gone the wrong direction. But and then we've gotten some Wisconsin-specific results. For instance, we usually fare better than the national average, but not by much. So we were at 53.1% in 2006. So we do mirror a little bit how the national average is. And all these numbers say we just need to do a better job preparing our youth to enter our financial system.
Is it tough to teach young people about finances? I would think they might find it as interesting as civics sometimes, and though they should know about that, they perhaps aren't as interested as they might be.
Well, I think it's one of these cases where if you don't know what you don't know. And what we're discovering is when students go through a course on personal finance, for instance, they have one in the Appleton Area School District. It's actually required for graduation. But, you know, they go there not knowing, you know, what to do, and it's also an intimidating topic. people don't want to admit what they don't know about
right.
money. But after, you know, they get into it for a little bit, they start realizing the importance of, you know, this information. It's also, it opens the door to sort of what do adults do? You know, this is, oh, okay, so now I know what a mortgage is. Now I know how credit cards work and how to choose one wisely or not to have one at all. And so it really demystifies our financial system for them. And at the end of it, it's not uncommon for the students to say, this is one of the best classes, the information I can use immediately. So especially in high school, because, you know, some students have a part-time job. They need to know, you know, what's on their paycheck, why are there certain taxes taken out, and these kinds of things. They might have a car. Maybe they have to pay the insurance for that. So what does that all mean? What am I insured for? They might be looking at getting their first apartment real quickly, either in college or after graduation in the workforce or whatever the case might be. So they're in tune. They need to know this information. They know they need to know it. But until you sit them down and kind of walk through it, they might not know what they don't know.
Moving forward a few years, when people are about to buy their first homes, and this sort of takes me back to the subprime problems that the country is having, in some cases, do people need to think about it if something might be too good to be true?
Well, you've said the magic words. Yeah, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And we see that, you know, with people that will try to sell you certain types of products and services that might not be appropriate for you. There might be, you know, fraud. Senior citizens are a target group for scam artists. They call them up on the phone and, you know, try to get their money. And so that's where we would, you know, we try again to be proactive. It's too late when someone's gotten a hold of your money and they've spent it and they're gone. So if we can get the message out that, you know, you should really do your due diligence, you can call our department at 1-800-47-CHECK, C-H-E-C-K, and you can actually talk with our securities folks, and they can tell you, is this person that you're speaking with, are they licensed to do the kind of work that they're doing? Are the products that they are selling, are they registered? Do they need to be registered? A lot of scam artists, of course, won't have a license and they won't have registered products. So these are just real simple ways to, you know, be proactive before you sign the dotted line. So hopefully that helps.
What your job here in the state is with the Department of Financial Institutions Office of Financial Literacy, will you be doing the same sort of thing on the president's panel, or?
Well, the fact that there is a Presidential Advisory Council on Financial Literacy, I think, shows that this issue is more than just a nice thing to do. It's an important thing to do, because when we look at individuals, that are making decisions every day and making choices every day, and most of those decisions and choices have a financial impact. And if we can incrementally improve people's decision-making for financial transactions, then in aggregate, when you add up all the individuals making these decisions, that affects our economy. So we can actually help the economy and our society if people are a little better off and can stand on their own 2 feet. So the Presidential Council is looking at, in fact, there was just 5 initiatives that were approved last week that look at the unbanked, look at employers or...
What does unbanked mean?
That's just a term that's used for people who aren't, don't have a relationship with a traditional financial institution.
Uh-huh.
So perhaps they don't have a savings account or a checking account, and so they're just not plugged into sort of the traditional system. They're using other sources, perhaps a cash checking store or maybe payday lending or, you know, other kinds of services or they just keep cash under their mattress, and we see that happening. And there's a lot of reasons why they're not "quote unquote" unbanked, or they are unbanked. So that's where you want to reach out in the community and you know, get that education out there that, you know, there's a lot of cost to using a cash checking store, for instance, as opposed to banking or a credit union or something like that. We're also looking at the workplace as an opportunity to educate employees about their own benefits and their own financial matters. There's an initiative to be proactive and positive with assessing students. So maybe there could be like a test that would be taken in schools when you're a senior, and then depending on how you what kind of score you get on the test, you would get positive incentives. Like maybe the top tier could actually go for a visit to the White House, or maybe certain financial institutions would say, yes, you know, we could open up a bank account or a credit union account, you know, because as a sort of an award, a positive reward. And so there's in other initiatives like this. I think it's a two-year appointment, and so it will hopefully last through the next administration, and then and see what kinds of things we can really get started. Next week there will be a press conference announcing another initiative, and that's a curriculum for middle school students called Money Math, and that's taking financial literacy and bring it right into the math class. There's a lot of skills in math that translate, of course, very easily to financial transactions. And so that's going to be free curriculum that's offered nationwide. So that'll be announced next week. So there's a variety of things that are happening right away, and then we'll just be putting out for public comment. We want a request for public comment will be coming up soon, so that everyone in Wisconsin, and especially interested in this, getting ideas from our state and others that the presidential council members can consider.
Are Americans saving enough, in your opinion?
Well, it depends how that's defined. The savings rate is negative right now. And now, if depending how you save, because savings, there's short-term savings. First of all, savings is delayed spending. So you have a goal, you want to maybe buy a house, you have some short-term saving goals for the next couple of years to, you know, save up for a down payment. Long-term savings is best done with investing. So if your money is parked in investments, you know, appropriately, sometimes that's not counted as savings. So uh-huh. It's called investing. Well, so you got to get into some of the semantics. But really, I think it's not uncommon to hear stories about people that would say, you know, if I miss my next paycheck, I'd be missing, you know, my home payment or mortgage. I'd be missing, you know, whatever. You know, I wouldn't be able to make it. That's not a good situation to be in. So if people, you know, can have a bit of a financial cushion for those kinds of financial emergencies and shocks to their pocketbook, then they need to, I think, do that. I think that would be a good idea.
Would you recommend then have several months' worth of your salary saved up just for those sorts of things?
Well, that is one. It depends. You know, if you're, you know, not making a lot of money, that's really hard to do. And so maybe there's different strategies. Some people would say, but if you could even have a home equity line of credit, you don't have to use it, but it's there if you get laid off. And it's easier to get a home equity line of credit if you're still employed. But that's another strategy. But really, it is ideal to have a certain amount of savings, whether that's going to be in a savings account or maybe in CDs, but something that's liquid enough that you can get access to it if you need it. So,
you're originally from Appleton?
Yes.
What has been your career path to get where you are in the office of or the Department of Financial Institution?
Yeah, in fact, if you asked me 10 years ago if I'd be doing financial literacy as a career and I'd also be serving on a presidential council, I wouldn't have believed you, but I actually have a business education background in an MBA at the UW School of Business. But I've been working in government. I was in the legislature for 7 years.
Uh-huh, representing Appleton?
No, not as a legislator.
Oh, okay.
Legislative aid, and then the Department of Financial Institutions was created, and so I was able to come over to the department as a policy advisor. And one of my side jobs was to create a department-wide financial education program, because the different pieces of our department, like banking or securities and credit unions and so on, each of them had a certain element of financial literacy. So we kind of put that together, and you know, the more we dug into the issue, the more we realized that regulation and licensing can only go so far in protecting consumers and financial transactions. So we have the Wisconsin Consumer Act, which is the law that describes our rights and responsibilities for credit or consumer credit transactions, $25,000 or less, so like a credit card or typical car loan. And so we get, you know, thousands of contacts in that area alone. And so if someone were to call us and say, you know, if they're on the verge of, you know, financial stress, and we said, gee, you know, we think to ourselves that had they only known X, Y, and Z, you know, a year before, they might not be in this situation. So, and then we did have a task force, and we asked the industry and financial education advocates and consumer advocates, put them all together in a room, and this task force was looking at the importance of a new law, the Gramm-Leach-Bliley law, that modernized the financial institutions. Anyway,
was that a state law or a national?
National.
Okay.
And so our goal there was to say, well, how is Wisconsin's financial industry going to remain competitive in this new environment? And the number one impediment for financial competitiveness was consumers' lack of financial education. So then we really realized, you know, this is a call or a charge for our department to be more proactive. And so we became more and more proactive, and then in kind of pioneering financial literacy through the governor's Doyle's Council with this Money Smart Week. We also created a teacher training course called the National Institute on Financial and Economic Literacy. So we have three separate weeks that we conduct in the summer. For teachers, and they can come and get instruction on how to teach students about financial literacy. We give them a curriculum and other information, and so that's been very, very successful. We sell out, we fill the seats every year. We're going into our, I think, eighth year now on that, and as of this academic year, because we've done three follow-up surveys of all the past participants, we know that teachers in Wisconsin are teaching over 50,000 students some type of financial literacy as a result of participating in the institute. And so we know that that's working. And you train a teacher to do this, and they can, you know, year after year are reaching out to students. So it's a real good multiplier effect.
Okay.
We also helped with the Department of Public Instruction create what's called model academic standards for our K-12 system. Standards define what we want students to know in a certain subject area, and in this case it was personal finance. So that's new, and these are first of their kind in the nation standards on the subject. So we're getting calls from other states now that are interested in knowing how they can kind of create their own. I think we were the first in the nation to create an Office of Financial Literacy. Now there's Illinois has one, Pennsylvania has one, and other states are putting together different kinds of offices. So people are tuning in to this. We were just a little ahead of the curve.
Okay. And then the correct pronunciation of your last name is?
Mansell.
Okay. All right. Well, I thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me, and that should do it.
Great, Brian. Thank you so much. And did you get a press release or something?